Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. Today I'm going to tell you one of the first stories that I wrote, actually, one of the first few. It's about Japanese balloon bombs. You may have heard of the Japanese balloon bombs. There's a couple things that you may not have heard about them, though. One of them is the possibility that they started one of the Tillamook burns. The other thing is how sophisticated these things actually were. A lot of people don't realize that it wasn't just a case of sending some stuff on the air and just hoping for the best. It was actually a pretty solid threat. And we'll never really know, to this day, if the program was successful in lighting the forest on fire, but we do know that forest fire broke out in a remote spot at an odd time of year, and we still don't have an actual cause for it. Well, this story was first published on July 19th, 2009. Here we go. From where we sit today, it sounds like the craziest, most desperate play imaginable. Japan, locked in a battle with the U.S. on various Pacific islands, floats bombs on balloons over the Pacific Ocean in an attempt to light the forests of Oregon and Washington on fire. You likely are familiar with at least the basics of this story. Phosphorus bombs were attached to giant balloons made of waxed rice paper. One source suggests they were made using mulberry paper, but they were definitely paper. They were launched on the prevailing winds which blow across Japan and onto American shores. As you may have heard, this program claimed the only American lives lost as casualties of the war in the mainland U.S. during World War II. That was when a church picnic party found an unexploded bomb in the woods in 1945, which exploded, killing all but one. What isn't generally known is how sophisticated these balloon bombs were. A balloon operates by maintaining a perfect balance between weight and lift. Too much weight, no flight. Too much lift, you're in orbit. So, the balloons had sensors on board to monitor altitude. If the balloon got too low, weight would be dropped to get them back up off the sea again. There was also a clock on board. A certain amount of elapsed time, the machine board would pop the balloon and drop the bomb. Well, as you can imagine, such a level of complexity dropped the success rate well below 1%. At least, so we think. Thousands of balloons were launched at great expense, roughly $200 million, to score a few dozen strikes on a howling wilderness. How could this possibly make sense? Two words, Tillamook burns. Remember, this program was launched in 1944. 11 years earlier, in 1933, the first and most devastating wildfire broke out in the early afternoon of August 14th in the Tillamook Forest, when a logging outfit in Washington County tried to snake just a few more logs out of an operation on Giles Creek. It was dragline logging, of course, everything was back then, and the friction of one of the logs getting winched to the log landing heated some forest duff until it burst into flames, and by the time the autumn rains had come, 12.5 billion board feet of top-shelf old-growth timber was gone. 6 years later, 1939, it happened again. Started in almost exactly the same place, by the same cause. People started talking of a 6-year jinx. The 6th year after that would be 1945. And in fact, the forest did catch fire again on July 10th, 1945. And then again in July of 1951. So yeah, that is every 6 years. But the 1945 burn is especially interesting. More than 200,000 acres of the old burn and 30,000 acres of green forest went up in smoke in 1945. It might have been put out faster, but America was still at war with Japan at the time, so there wasn't much manpower available, not as much as there had been for earlier fires anyway. By July of 1945, the balloon bomb program had been halted for a couple months already. Hard as it is to believe, the Japanese started the program just as the rainy season commenced in the Pacific Northwest forests, and then sent hundreds of would-be fire starters on their way across the Pacific all winter long. This at a time when year when you couldn't get a forest fire started if you had 1,000 gallons of kerosene to do it with. Then they gave up on the program just as the sun started coming out and drying up the forest. It's probably safe to assume that if the Japanese had started this program in April and continued it through October rather than the other way around, history would be a little different and the balloon program wouldn't have been such a near total failure. But was it really a failure? In marked contrast to the 1933 and 1939 burns, this blaze broke out very early in the fire season, in early July. And information about the source of the burn is hard to come by. What is known is simply that it was near the Salmonberry River, a tributary of the Nehalem, in a spot that's virtually inaccessible. Could it be that the Japanese balloon bomb program actually did light the forest on fire, 2 months after the Japanese had given up on the plan as a failure? We'll probably never know, but it's an interesting possibility. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/CC. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.